This morning we're going to look at 1 Samuel chapter 3 verses 1 through 10. Basically, it's a lesson or it's an illustration of hearing God's voice. Now, I've got a couple of questions here for you in terms of hearing God's voice. The first one is, well, what do you think about this statement? Hearing God's voice. Think about it for just a second. And many of us being Christians for a while, it has a theological underpinning to it. It has an experiential underpinning to it where you've heard God's voice before. But if you're newer in the faith, what do you think about that? Or if you're outside of the faith, hearing God's voice, is it really necessary in 2019? You think about all of the artificial intelligence and the metadata that we see our society moving towards so quickly. AI or artificial intelligence is really persuading us as people to make our decisions for us. It's almost as if AI knows ahead of time what we want or what we don't want, what we want to spend or where we want to visit. It knows ahead of time, and it can be the voice for us. We don't need to think for ourselves. It seems as if AI is doing that more and more. That could be a blessing or that could be a curse. In fact, the last 8 months I've been involved in real estate and trying to learn that vocation. And one of the things I picked up in listening to the people that have experienced, the brokers and those that have been in the business for a while, is the fact that many of these real estate companies are buying smaller companies, and they're not buying the companies for their product. What are they buying the companies for? Their data, yeah, their mailing lists, because now we are in a data-driven world. And so to hear God's voice, to cut through all of that noise, to be able to allow the shepherd and overseer of our souls to give us direction, to help us in challenges, to help us work through difficulties, to get maybe a yes or a no, to develop a peace relative to a decision, a big decision like marriage or moving or something like that. When I decided to marry Greta, not only did I hear God's voice, but I got God's back of the hand right here. It's like, yeah, marry her, definitely. So hearing God's voice, that's the first. The second one is, how can we hear God's voice today? How can we hear God's voice today? And there's some obvious ones that Christian theology tells us. Well, did you know that we can hear God's voice through creation? His presence and his personality screams through creation. Romans chapter 1 says his invisible attributes are clearly seen. He makes manifest his ways and his character and his majestic creation. He makes that known through the world around us. He also can speak to us through our conscience. Romans chapter 2 says that our conscience is the law of God is embedded in our hearts, and he can speak to us through our conscience. Thirdly, he can speak to us through the scriptures. And my hope would be that you have a steady devotional, steady time of prayer, and a steady time of reading the word on a daily basis so that you're able to check in with God and you're able to cut through all the noise of our busy lives and just hear what Jesus has to say. And then also he speaks to us through his spirit. We as believers go from spiritual death to spiritual life. And when the Holy Spirit is given to us at the moment of salvation, he begins to inhabit our lives. He begins to help us to decrease, that his spirit would increase within us. And through that, as we walk through our relationship with Jesus, he is able to nudge and to guide, to convict, to encourage, to support. He's able to do that through the power of his spirit. And then what's the last time you heard God's voice? If you're an older saint, when's the last time you heard God's voice? Now, it's kind of a trick question because my hope would be every day. Every day that we're in the Word or every day in prayer, we're hearing. And we may not hear something as decisive as we'll read in 1 Samuel 3 this morning. But God is always encouraging me, always telling me that he loves me, always saying, fear not, always saying, I'm in control, always saying, trust me. When I read the Word, I'm going through the New Testament this year. That's been my devotion, to go through the New Testament in 1 year. I'm going very methodically. I'm going very slowly. If I want to stop and camp out on a chapter for a couple of days, then I do it. But constantly through all this, God is meeting me where I'm at in my life situation and helping me navigate through it via his cords of loving kindness. He's always on your side. He always wants to speak to you. It may not be in the billboard language or communication, but in that still small voice, he's constantly encouraging us, telling us about his character, and comforting us with his unconditional love. And so that's the backdrop as we move into 1 Samuel chapter 3. Now the setting here, if you're not familiar with it, and for time's sake, I'll just kind of give you the summary. The setting in the first two chapters of 1 Samuel are about basically Hannah, her husband Elkanah, their child Samuel, and then Eli and his sons Hophni and Phinehas. And so I can read them. I've got them up on the screen for you here. In chapter 1, Hannah, who is Samuel's mother, prays for a child amid an adverse living situation. Unfortunately, she has another person to whom her husband is married. It's a polygamous relationship, and that person is just awfully, awfully mean and harsh towards Hannah. So despite that, God honors her prayers, and Hannah in turn dedicates her son to be a servant of the Lord in the temple. And that's where we'll see Samuel when we pick up chapter 3. Chapter 2 is not so much a good one for Eli. Eli is the priest of the Lord at this time in Shiloh, in the tabernacle. But Eli allows corruption and pride to prosper amid his leadership, and ultimately he's judged by God. In chapter 2, verse 31, you can see, "Behold, the days are coming that I would cut off your arm and the arm of your father's house, so that there will not be an old man in your house." Eli was not faithful to the ministry. Eli was not faithful to God. Eli was more concerned about the status quo and, in a sense, protecting his sons who were also in the ministry. He was more concerned about that than the righteousness of God and the care of the people. And so there became a change in leadership. Ultimately, you can see here that Samuel would be the one who would be raised up. And God is going to speak to Samuel in a very, very decisive manner. And so that's the backdrop. Let's take a look at these first 10 verses and see what takes place here. Chapter 3 of 1 Samuel, verse 1. "Now the boy Samuel ministered to the Lord before Eli, and the word of the Lord was rare in those days. There was no widespread revelation, likely because of Eli's laxness on the job and his vocation. It came to pass at that time while Eli was lying down in his place, and when his eyes had begun to grow so dim that he couldn't see, and before the lamp of God went out in the tabernacle of the Lord where the ark of God was, and while Samuel was lying down, that the Lord called Samuel. And he answered, 'Here I am.' So he ran to Eli, and he said, 'Here I am, for you did call me.' And he said, 'I didn't call you. Lie down again.' And so he went and lay down. Then the Lord called yet again, 'Samuel.' So Samuel arose and again went to Eli and said, 'Here I am, for you called me.' He answered, 'I did not call, my son. Lie down again.' Now, Samuel did not yet know the Lord," again, Eli's responsibility, "nor was the word of the Lord yet revealed to him. And the Lord called Samuel again a third time." Persistent, isn't he? God can be persistent in our lives when he wants to accomplish his purposes. "The Lord called Samuel again the third time. So he arose and went to Eli and said, 'Here I am, for you did call me.' So Eli finally perceived that the Lord had called the boy. Therefore Eli said to Samuel, 'Go lie down, and it shall be, if he calls you, you must say, "Speak, Lord, for your servant hears." And so Samuel went and lay down in his place, and the Lord came and stood and called as at other times, 'Samuel, Samuel.' And Samuel answered, 'Speak, for your servant hears.'" And unfortunately, the rest of the chapter is God speaking to Samuel saying, "Eli has offended me and misrepresented me enough, and therefore I'm going to put him down and I'm going to set you up in his place." And Samuel, his first act of ministry or his first act of responding to God's voice had to be that person to tell Eli that his presence had been judged and his placement within leadership was coming to an end, unfortunately. Well, let's take a look at the story here and look at two ways that both Eli and Samuel are serving God. And you can see the groundwork for, unfortunately, Eli losing his position in leadership here. Eli serves God. Well, firstly, unfortunately, he allowed his sons to behave corruptly. If you go back to chapter 2, verse 12, you can see in verse 12, Eli, the sons of Eli were corrupt. They did not know the Lord. Basically, I think that pretty much tells you what's going on here. So here, Eli is allowing his sons to behave corruptly, to misrepresent the people, to steal from them, to treat them very, very harshly, and he's not doing anything about it. Secondly, he voiced displeasure to them but didn't hold them accountable. If you fast forward to verse 23, you can see Eli stand up and not act with a great deal of decisiveness here, but kind of just talk about a problem, but not do anything about it. He said to his sons, "Why do you do such things? For I hear your evil dealings from all the people." "No, my sons, for it is not a good report that I hear. You make the Lord's people transgress." Boy, that's pretty sad, isn't it? That he's not willing to see things for what they are, even though the people are telling them, and he can see the byproduct of what's happening to the people. Nevertheless, he doesn't do anything about it. Thirdly, he really honored his sons more than God. Verse 29, you can see, "Why do you kick at my sacrifice and my offering, which I have commanded in my dwelling place, and honor your sons more than me, to make yourselves fat with the best of all the offerings of Israel, my people?" This is God speaking to Eli, saying, wow, not only do you honor your sons more than me, but here you are, and you're taking the best of what is in the country, and you're keeping it to yourself. That's not ministry. That's pride. And then finally here, you can see that he's lax in his duty to God. The oil on the lamp should never have gone out. Exodus 27 and Leviticus 24 talk about that. In fact, Exodus 27 here says, "You'll command the children of Israel that they bring you pure oil of pressed olives for the light, to cause the lamp to burn continually." And it's just a small little hint in this detective story, but here you can see in chapter 3 that the lamp had gone out. Not only had Eli's eyes grown dim, but the lamp had grown dim as well. And so it's not the biggest deal, but to me, the writer is giving us clues to show us that things are not going well within the house of the Lord. And he ultimately did hear from God. As I mentioned in chapter 2, verse 31, God comes to him and says, "Enough is enough. We are going to make a change here, unfortunately. Justice, if you want exact justice on the ministry and on your children in particular, then I'm going to have to exact justice upon you." So this is how Eli served God, at least in the context of these two chapters. It's a sad story, but God's ways will always prevail. His righteousness will always prevail. And you can see here, he is going to raise up another leader, and one who is very well known in the annals of the Old Testament, the annals of Judaism and Christianity. Samuel is a big name within the story and the history of the nation of Israel. One of the, probably the first judge, or the one of the first, as we move into from judge to king, he's that transition place. So here you have Eli. Well, what about Samuel? What can we learn about Samuel, and how does this help us in terms of fashioning our lives so that maybe we're in the right place to hear from the Lord? Well, firstly, Samuel served Eli with preparation. If you look at chapter 3, verse 5, he ran to Eli and he said, "Here I am." So that tells me he was within earshot. He was close enough in service to his boss, if you will, or in service to the priest, that he positioned himself, even on his own time, if you will, even nighttime when it's time to go to sleep and get away from the things of the day. Even in the evening, he was within earshot to be able to serve and to respond to the priest. He was that close. We have a new black lab, Edna is her name. She and I have this little crazy game that we play every day. Actually, it's my game because I want to hear if she can hear me or not. But she has a ceramic bowl that she eats out of, and we'll feed her in the morning, and then she'll get into her routine where she'll retire for a while so she can take a nap after she's had her breakfast. And that was a joke, by the way. Okay. So she'll be in another part of the house, and we don't have a great big house, 1,600 square feet, one story, and I'm talking like a realtor now, aren't I, right? cash, conventional, FHA, VA, how do you want to finance this thing? But what I'll do is I'll play a little game, because I'll have a bowl of cereal in the morning before I take off, and so I pull the cereal out of the cabinet, and I'll intentionally kind of ruffle the plastic. You know how when you unfurl the cereal and the plastic makes a little noise, and then I'll just stop and see if she hears me, and I'll just wait, because she'll come trotting in soon. If she doesn't hear that, then what I do is I'll just lean over and I'll put some of the cereal in the ceramic bowl, and when the cereal hits the bowl, it makes a little noise, and then without fail, ding, 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 and I have her there. So she's within earshot of my breakfast, she's within earshot of my lunch, she's within earshot of my dinner, usually. So all kidding aside, here you see something about Samuel, about his character, that he's prepared no matter when to serve the priest. Secondly, he serves with passion. I love this. He ran. Would to God that we would have that kind of verve or energy for the people around us that we serve, even just the people in our family that we're instant, in season and out of season, to help them at their most slight need. Here, he ran. I just love that about this story. There's a couple of little things in this story that just really excite me. And this is one of those that, man, he was about serving. His heart was in the right place. And so he's definitely here serving with a passion, and it shows up in his actions. Thirdly, he served with obedience. How many times did he go and just basically say, "Here I am"? Right off the bat, he has a service, a servant's heart, an obedient attitude, where even God is speaking to him, and he's not quite aware of it, he's not mature enough to figure it out, but three times he comes and just says, "Here I am." After the first time, I might get a little bit sarcastic. "Here I am again, Eli. Here I am again and again, Eli. I guess you just don't want me to get any sleep tonight, huh? How about that?" But here, there's an act of obedience where it doesn't matter. What's the old phrase? When someone says jump, you don't say how high, you just jump. Well, I see that in Samuel here, that the attitude of his heart is one where he's obedient. It's not about his opinions or his tastes. It's about serving Eli and serving in such a way that he's available, he's passionate, and he's obedient about it. And then another one, he's diligent in his duty to God. Chapter 3, verse 1 just comes right out and says, "The boy Samuel did what to the Lord?" He ministered. He just simply ministered to the Lord. It's just a very basic statement, but it tells me a great deal that no matter what, he was diligent in whatever God put before him. And you can see in his character witness in this story that he's diligent to do what God asks him to do. Romans chapter 12, verse 11 talks about diligence. It says, "Not lagging in diligence, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord, rejoicing in hope, patient in tribulation, continuing steadfastly in prayer." Are we diligent in our work? Are you diligent? Kind of a little tangent here. But are you diligent in your work? Are you diligent behind the wheel of the car? Are you diligent in your relationships? Are you diligent with handling the truth? Are you diligent with how you relate to other people in your community? That should be one of the hallmarks of our lives as Christians, is that we're diligent. And I can see that in spades in young Samuel's life here. Boy, he is so diligent. He is obedient. He has passion. He's willing to serve with no strings attached. That's the kind of person that I want to be. So these are the services between Eli, God, and Samuel. Well, let's get to the point here and see some things here about hearing God's voice. Because obviously we read the verses, and God is a major player in here. His voice is a major participant. Well, what are some of the things that I can pull out to share with you that I see in how we can best position ourselves to hear God's voice? Well, firstly, Samuel was definitely humble, wasn't he? Don't have to go into a long discussion of that. His character and his attitudes show me that he's a very, very humble person. Now, another example of this would be in Habakkuk. If you go to the right, one of the minor prophets, Habakkuk chapter 2, verses 1 through 4. Chapter 1, if you're not familiar with the story, God comes to Habakkuk, much like in our story in Samuel, and says, "I'm going to judge Israel, and I'm going to use Babylon to judge Israel because of their unfaithfulness toward me." Habakkuk in chapter 1 wrestles with God, says, "How could you do that? How could you send the Raiders to beat up on the Chargers? How can you send the Dodgers to beat up on the Padres? It's so unfair." And yet God, just in his stillness and his consistency, says, "This is what's going to take place." Habakkuk has a time to think about it, so some time to meditate on it, and then review his actions, and then he responds here in chapter 2, verses 1 through 4. He says, "I'll stand my watch and set myself on the rampart and watch to see what he, God, will say to me and what I will answer when I'm corrected." That's humility. "And the Lord answered and said, write the vision, make it plain on tablets that he may run who reads it. For the vision is yet for an appointed time, but at the end it will speak and it will not lie. Though it tarries, wait for it, because it will surely come. It will not tarry. Behold, the proud, his soul is not upright in him, but the just shall live by his faith." Now, the message is one thing. The message is going to be clearly communicated to not only Israel, but to everybody going forward, that the righteous live by faith, whether Old or New Testament. But the attitude of Habakkuk here is one that you see in the first verse. Let's go back to it. He says, I'll stand my watch. Kind of sounds like Samuel, doesn't it? I'll set myself on the rampart. Sounds like Samuel. And watch to see what he will say to me and what I will answer when I'm corrected. Not if I'm corrected. I think Habakkuk had a chance to reflect on the words that he exchanged with God and realize that was awfully presumptuous and awfully prideful. So with a little time and a little reflection and a little prayer, here he steps back and says, I need a course correction because I recognize now that he is God and I am not. And so there's an element of humility here. And then again, as I mentioned, I see Samuel bound up in this story where he's anticipating. He stands his watch, reference number one, and sets himself on the rampart, and he watches to see what God will say to him. And therefore, in a contemporary idea of hearing God's voice, what's your humility factor right now? Are you dictating terms to God? Are you shunning God because things aren't going your way? They're all normal emotions, and I can ask you because I've felt those ways before where, God, I don't get this. This is not at all what I planned. Or, God, I'm going to kind of give you the cold shoulder because I didn't get what I want. We have a myriad of emotions in our relationship with God, don't we? The beautiful thing is we can express them all to him because he loves us and he knows anyway. But here, Habakkuk, here, Samuel, are just humble. They're not my will, but thy will be done, that I must decrease, you must increase within me. I will pick up my cross, deny myself, pick up my cross, and I will follow you. This is the attitude of a Christian, a right attitude that will produce blessings in one's relationship with God. And so I ask you again, number one, are you in that humble place with the Lord right now where you're not directing traffic, you're not full of expectations, you're not angry because things didn't go your way, you're not fearful because the future is a bit murky and there's decisions that have to be made? It's just an attitude of humility. God, you are completely in charge and we trust you. Number one, humility. Secondly, when God calls in the story here, he calls according to God's purpose. In chapter 3, verse 4, he just basically is picking Samuel. The verse again says, the Lord called Samuel and he answered, here I am. And the reason that he is calling Samuel here is because Eli's days are done and it's time for a new order of priestly leadership in the kingdom of God. And therefore, God has chosen Samuel for whatever reason, not because of who he is, but because of God's sovereignty. Although Samuel is a very humble and diligent and obedient person, it's helpful to have someone like that in leadership. But here, God is sovereignly calling Samuel, and he's calling according to his purpose. Now, another example is Paul in Acts chapter 9 on the screen. The Lord said to Paul, the Lord said to him, go, for he's a chosen vessel of mine to bear my name before Gentiles, kings, and the children of Israel. And we know the story of Paul. Paul's life had a very specific purpose to it, and one that has been written down and one that has been repeated over the centuries. Well, true or false, each one of you have a specific plan that God has been working both in and through you. Now, we have an element of volition or free will bound up within our course of life with God. But isn't that comforting to know that he's got a specific plan for you? Specific. Every missionary that ever went out into the field knows that God had a specific plan for them. Every decision that is made is one where God has a specific plan. And here he's calling according to that big purpose right now. And I would, as an encouragement again, is that when God calls us in our lives, when he speaks to us, sometimes it's in the subtle ways, but there are times when it's a situation where it's a huge decision. And he steps in and he helps guide us. The decision to get married, for example, the decision to relocate, the decision to change the tone or the scope of a relationship with someone. I know for me, the decision to become a pastor was not mine. I actually kind of tried to run from it early on in my young Christian days. I didn't want to be the quarterback. And yet over the process of about 18 months, God was just so patient to continue to lean on me and shape me and mold me to he started to push me in that direction. And I've never looked back. I've never been disappointed over hearing God's voice and following his direction in that case in my life. You're the same way. God has a specific calling and a specific direction, a specific attitude. And it's just a matter for us to slow down long enough in the noise of our worlds, to slow down long enough to be able to hear, whether it's a minor decision going forward or it's a major decision going forward. Thirdly, Samuel waited with anticipation. In verse 5, he ran to Eli and he said, "Here I am, for you called me." Again, the idea of running tells me that he's anticipating things in a moment's notice. And so here he's waiting, and Proverbs 8:34 says, "Blessed is the man who listens to me, watching daily at my gates, waiting at the post of my doors, for whoever finds me finds life." So there's an element of anticipation here. Now, in the case of his situation, he's anticipating Eli's calls. But how about us in relation to hearing God's call and hearing God's voice? Are we in a place where we're anticipating hearing from him? And sometimes he may go long stretches without saying anything super big. Sometimes it just may be long stretches of how to say certain things to certain people, how to address a business decision, how to recalibrate something that you're feeling about yourself that shouldn't be that way, that he tries to rephrase and reshape our mindsets towards ourselves or towards others. But we should be in that place where we're ready to hear. And then that comes back to spiritual disciplines. What are your spiritual disciplines like? Are you in the Word every day with anticipation to hear from God? Now, you can't force his hand, but you can certainly be there saying, "Lord, here I am. Here I am. Please speak to me." Your time in prayer. Are you anticipating hearing from God? Or is it one where, I know for myself, prayer sometimes is I just blurt out all the things that I need and I think my friends need. And then once I'm done, I basically kind of fold things up and I'm on my way. But when's the last time you actually sat for 5 or 10 minutes completely still and just waited to see if God would speak to you? That's a hard thing to do in our culture, isn't it? It's very, very difficult. I know my default mechanism is if my phone is around me and I have a moment where I'm not entertained by somebody or something, I just pick the phone up. I've recognized it in the last 6 months that it's almost as if I don't want stillness or I'm uncomfortable with stillness. And I'm trying to discipline myself to get away with that, from that, where I can just sit for 5 or 10 minutes and just enjoy life rather than be living vicariously through a website or a Facebook post. And I'm not saying that the phone is bad or the social media is bad, but there has to be a place where we just have to get to where we can be still and provide ground where the Lord can speak to us. Fourthly, God waited for Samuel. In verses 6 and 8, he called and Samuel went the wrong direction. That tells us more about God than it does about Samuel, doesn't it? That if we're in a place where we're not sure whether God is speaking to us or not, does he give us one shot and then cast us to the wind? No. If you're not sure, time is your ally. If you're not sure, just wait on him and give yourself more time to really discern whether it's his voice or not. Here you can see God came to Samuel how many times? Three times. So here God is very patient. Samuel's not in a place where he's becoming stiff-necked or rebellious or doesn't want to hear it. He's just trying to grow into this place where his will and God's voice connect. Fifthly, Samuel sought counsel. I think the better way to say that is Samuel was open to counsel, because he goes to Eli thinking that God is speaking, and that finally Eli clues in and says, okay, it's the Lord speaking to you, and therefore here's what you should do. But in terms of hearing God's voice, if you're not sure, do you have friends that you trust that are spiritually mature that can help you? I would hope all of us have at least 2 or 3 people that we can really drop our guard with and say, "I don't get this. I don't understand it. I'm a little scared. I'm a little embarrassed to tell you, but I just don't understand what's going on here." And the verse again, "For by wise counsel you'll wage war, and in a multitude of counselors there is safety." And here again, I think Samuel is getting good counsel from Eli. Actually, it was good counsel because it accomplished what God had intended. But my hope for us is as we're walking through this Christian life and attempting to discern God's leading and hear God's voice in our life, that we've got people around us that we trust that we're willing to, again, be transparent with and tell them what we're thinking and what we're feeling. Samuel was patient. He was patient with himself. Imagine this. Put yourself in Samuel's position, and you just found out from Eli that God knocked on your door or called you or tried to get your attention three times, and you missed it all three times. Is there room for self-condemnation there? You betcha. Is there room to say, boy, if I missed God once, I'm sure he's not going to speak again. And if he does, boy, he's not going to be very happy. And yet here you can see again that God is patient. In a sense, Samuel is patient with himself, that he doesn't condemn himself. He just simply, when he realizes it's God speaking, he goes back to square one. He sets himself in that position for when he hears that voice, then he knows it's God. And then he says, here I am. And then finally, and this is just a little thing, but sometimes when I read, little things mean something to me. But if you go back to verse 10, I think God's call here grows in intensity. In chapter 3, verse 10, the Lord came and stood and called, as at other times, those other three times, and he says, Samuel, Samuel. So it's not at other times in a sense, because here he is saying Samuel's name not once, but twice, as almost to convey that I really want to get your attention this time. I really want you to know that this is me, and I don't want you to run to Eli. And again, I could be making a big deal out of it, but as I mentioned, little things in the scriptures mean something to me. And I can see here that it's as if God is really trying to get Samuel's attention so that it's intense, it's focused, and that way Samuel doesn't go any other direction than towards God. And the rest of Samuel's life is filled with victories and losses, with highs and lows. But through it all, you can hear a man being, a person being led by God. God speaking to him, God giving him direction. And if we have the opportunity all the way through the Old and the New Testament, there are stories of people just like you and I who hear God's voice, who move according to God's unction and his provision. So there's wonderful accounts here of God being active and desiring to speak to his kids. No different from you and I today. And so just a little devotional primer, if you will, to some characteristics of hearing God's voice. He wants to speak to us. He screams at us sometimes in our pain or in the stillness. He'll speak with a still, small voice. My experience is he'll come when I least expect it. When I do expect it and have all this presumption that he'll speak to me, sometimes I don't hear from him. But it's in that place where I'm not really, I don't really have an agenda or I don't have a point of view I'm trying to push, where I'm just fellowshipping with him and enjoying him, that all of a sudden he'll speak and he'll say something. He always wants to speak to us. He loves us unconditionally. He is so very, very patient with us if we'll be patient with him and be patient with ourselves. Lord, thank you again that you're an active God. Thank you that you are as intimate with one person as you are another. You're not someone who has to speak to a large group of people because you're short on time. You are very intimate. You're our good shepherd. And to each of us, you're able to speak to us. May we put ourselves in a place where we're able to hear your voice. May we appreciate the fact that you desire to communicate with us. May we not have presumption of you or of ourselves. May we simply trust you by faith. Let go of our expectations and let go of our experiences and let go of what we think our future should look like and simply trust you and then listen for your still small voice to guide us. Thank you that you always desire to communicate with us in the biggest and in the small. In Jesus' name, amen.